Searchlights pierce a starry night sky, sweeping the clouds and illuminating a towering edifice in the form of the words, 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company. On a home video, there's a party hat with happy birthday on it, and balloons. A little girl gleefully opens a present. A EuropaCorp M6 Films Grieve Productions co-production. The little girl smiles with joy at a toy horse. With the participation of Canal Plus, TPS Star and M6, the girl shows the horse to her smiling mother, who kisses her and brings her over an iced birthday cake with a candle in the shape of the number 5. The birthday girl smiles and blows out the candle. A man wakes up, sitting on a sofa in a darkened living room. Liam Neeson. He switches on a table lamp. A film by Pierre Morel. There are Chinese food boxes on the coffee table. He puts down a framed photograph of a girl on a horse and puts to one side the instructions for a karaoke machine. Written by Luc Besson and Robert Mark Kamen. Taken. A car parks on a busy California street. The man gets out wearing dark glasses and goes into a shop with an illuminated sign inside saying, cellular phones.
Mr. Mills, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very fine. I suppose you want to see it again?
If you don't mind.
You know where it is?
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I charged you a dollar for every time you came in to examine the machine, you'd probably own it. You know, it's the one all the pros use. Mariah Carey, Beyoncé, Gwen Stefani.
Really? Where's Beyoncé? Just kidding. I'll take it.
Back at home, he carefully wraps the karaoke machine in paper decorated with clown designs, meticulously inspecting every fold. He gets out of his car on a sunny residential street. He smiles, holding the present wrapped in a wide purple ribbon. He strides through the gates to a large white house and past a fountain on the pathway. There's an elegant party going on in the extensive gardens.
Excuse me, sir? The adult party's in the front of the house.
I'm Kim's father.
Excuse me, but I work for her father.
The real father.
It's okay, sir. I got it. Hello, Brian.
Lenore? I just wanted to give Kim her present.
Oh, you're letting the kids have their own space. You could put it right there with the others.
I want to give it to her myself.
Still having trouble following the rules, I see.
Oh, come on, Lenny.
I've asked you not to call me that, please.
Excuse me, Lenore.
Dad!
Oh, my darling. Hello, my sweet. Happy birthday.
I was just telling your father how we arranged the presents.
Here.
Sweetie, I think it's bad manners to open one and not the others.
Cool.
A karaoke machine?
Well, I figure she wants to be a singer.
When she was 12, Brian, we've moved on.
Thank you, Daddy.
Oh, my pleasure.
I still want to be a singer, just don't tell Mom.
You got it. Here, one for the book.
Oh, we have a professional photographer.
Big smile, sweetie. That's my girl.
A racehorse is led in past the richly decorated gazebos. Brian's face falls.
Oh, my God!
Kim hugs her bearded stepfather, dressed in an expensive-looking suit, and leaps onto the horse.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, Stuart, you're impossible.
I know. Hey, Brian.
Stuart?
He's not a little girl anymore, huh?
I guess not.
You gonna join us for lunch?
No, thanks. I just wanted to be here to wish her a happy birthday.
Good to see you, Brian.
You too.
Brian's eyes harden as Stuart and Lenore walk away arm in arm. Kim excitedly parades around on her new horse. The karaoke machine is abandoned on the ground at Brian's feet. At night, he gets his photo developed at a supermarket.
Thanks.
He opens a photo album with Happy Birthday Kim on the front and carefully places the snap of her and the karaoke machine in the center of a page with a handwritten caption, Kim, age 17. He smiles. Kim, age 16, is holding two kittens. He looks back through the album and comes across the photos of Kim, aged 5, smiling with her mother. He grins and strokes his little girl's cheek on a photo.
You forgot.
Come on.
Well, it's not like I didn't call to remind you. L.A., third Saturday in May, red meat, red wine, sound familiar?
Yeah, he probably had a lot on his mind.
Yeah, the busy life of a retiree, every day a new adventure.
What does a retiree do these days anyway? Take naps, play golf, hit on rich widows?
Matt takes care of the morning.
Yeah, well, come on, guys, you know why I'm here.
Yeah? How's that going?
Okay, we had her birthday today. Can you believe my Kimmy's 17?
Whoa. 17?
To Kim.
Lenny still got a hard-on for you?
She's not Lenny anymore. She's Lenore.
Oh, she's still got a hard-on.
And the husband?
This ain't perfect.
Dig deep enough, there's always shit.
Yeah, we can dig if you want us to dig.
What, you think he hasn't done it already, Mr. Attention to Detail?
Thank you, Bernie. Huh.
How's Kimmy?
Good. She's good.
Yeah? She sleep over yet?
Well, let's say we're working on it.
Does she appreciate the fact that you've given up your life? In order to be closer to her?
What a life, huh?
Huh.
Hey, you remember when we were in Beirut after the chief disappeared? Oh, and Bri was in so deep with that crazy-ass sheikh from Hezbollah? The guy who said he'd get us inside, and then he disappeared?
And we're scrambling to get the hell out of Dodge before we get taken down. And where are you?
I promised her I would never miss a birthday.
Yeah, that went down well at Langley, huh? When they found out you flew the coop to attend your child's birthday 9,000 miles away. Where'd you say your next posting was after that? The Arctic Circle? Spying on penguins, I believe it was?
No, penguins live in Antarctica.
Actually, it was Alaska. What's your point, Sam?
My point is, we have an open space. Say the word, it's yours.
Brian glances round at his former colleagues.
The likes there's rare. Guys.
See you, Brian.
Good night, guys.
See you, Brian.
Hey, look, all kidding aside, we think what you're doing is a great thing, trying to make up for lost time with Kimmy. But tomorrow's job, right here, 4 hours work, $2,500 just for taking some pop diva to and from her concert. We're one short.
A singer?
I don't know if you call her a singer exactly, more like a cash cow. 20 million records this girl sold already, and she's not even 25. Job's a piece of cake, Bri. All we gotta do is get her there and take her back. Inside the hall, they got their own people.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, it'll be perfect, just like old times.
Better. No one gets killed. Tomorrow. Good night, guys.
Yeah.
Get in the back, Wendy. I always get in the back.
At night, a brightly illuminated arena stands between the twinkling suburbs and the towering lights of city skyscrapers. A large 4x4 and a black car are let into the arena by security. Camera flashes reflect off the cars as they come to a halt. Brian's friend Sam opens the rear door, and a young woman in dark glasses steps out to face the massed ranks of photographers. Sam walks with the pop star. Brian follows behind.
Ma'am, excuse me. If you don't mind, I suggest you keep moving.
My mother is ma'am. If you don't mind.
Come on, let's go.
Okay. The bodyguards hustle her past the cameras.
Bernie, Casey, you're out here. I'll be up front. Bri, you're in the room.
Okay.
Let's go. Thank you.
La, 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 la.
Brian stands by the dressing room door as Shira's entourage fuss over her hair, costume, and makeup.
Wow, it was beautiful.
Thanks. What did you say your name was again?
Mills, Brian Mills.
Nice to meet you, Brian Mills.
You too.
You're on! Come on, let's go down, let's go!
Okay, guys!
Excuse me, miss. I know this isn't the right time, but I have a daughter who wants to be a singer and was wondering if you had any tips for her.
Yeah, I do. Tell her to pick another career.
He's taken aback by the answer.
I got one. We're waiting on an airstrike, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. And then my satellite phone rings.
Yeah? Who is
Hello.
It?
Hello.
It's the guy we're looking to terminate.
Hi, honey.
I'd like to know if we want some tea set up.
Sorry, guys, it's Kim.
He just heard the
Noise! I'm at a concert. You know the song? Yep, that's her. No, I'm not attending. I'm not attending. I'm helping some friends out with security. Well, of course I met her. Who do you think's guarding her? I'm glad you're impressed. Hey, I'm happy you called. What? Lunch, tomorrow? Sure, I know the place. 12:30 it is. I'll see you then.
Here he is.
And?
So what happened?
She wants to have lunch.
Okay.
Just the two of us.
Well, all right, that's fantastic.
See, there's progress.
It's great.
The security detail stands ready as Shira comes off stage. Sam scans for danger as the singer hugs a friend.
Who left that gate open? Brian, get her out of here. Take the lead. Go, 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 go.
Brian escorts She-Ra from the crowd of fans. Round a corner, someone's waiting with a knife. As he strikes, Brian pushes the singer aside and expertly takes the man down.
Easy!
Bernie, stand by! Stand by!
Go, go, go!
Brian hustles the star into her car, and they speed off.
Here, take this. This sure will take the edge off the shock. Come on, come on, drink some more.
The distraught girl leans into his shoulder, and he comforts her with fatherly concern.
It's okay, it's okay. You're safe now.
Later, Sam hands out the wages.
Bernie? Casey?
Yep.
Rambo?
Seriously, Bri, you should think about coming with us. You still got the edge, and there's more of this to be had.
She's going to college next year, right?
Yep.
You're gonna lose her.
It gives me a year to find her.
Mr. Mills? She'd like to see you.
In the hall of her luxury suite, She-Ra, in a white bathrobe, approaches Brian.
How are you feeling?
Better. So your daughter wants to be a singer?
Yep, since she was five.
You know, it's not what everyone thinks it is. Once the glam wears off, it's just a lot of hotel rooms, lots of airports.
It's what she wants.
She reaches into her pocket and hands Brian a piece of paper.
First number is Gio, my vocal coach. If he says she can sing, she can sing. He'll give her the coaching she needs, and the fee is on me. The second number is my manager. If Gio clears her, he'll make sure she gets a shot.
Thank you.
No, Mr. Mills. Thank you.
He watches her go and thoughtfully taps the card, which also has her personal number on it. He's already waiting at a restaurant when Kim arrives.
There she is.
Dad!
His face falls as Lenore appears.
Hi, sweetie. Hi.
Hi.
Don't look so excited.
I was just surprised. I thought it was just going to be Kim and I.
Oh, I asked Mom to come.
One raspberry banana milkshake, extra cherries, just the way you like it.
Thanks.
Lenny, Lenore, would you like something?
I'm fine, thanks.
So?
So, Dad, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You know my friend Amanda?
Yep.
Her cousins asked us to spend vacation with them in Paris. How cool is that?
Why do you want to go to Paris?
Dad, hello? The Louvre, the Impressionist Museum, the Picasso Museum?
I didn't know you were so into art.
Are you kidding? I've been to the MoMA, like, 100 times. And Amanda went to France last summer, and she came back. She could practically speak French.
And because you're under 18, you need my permission to leave the country.
Dad, please. I really, really want to go. And they've got this, like, sick apartment overlooking the river.
Just you and Amanda.
And her cousins.
Don't make a big deal out of this, Brian. Just sign the paper.
He looks deeply worried as he eyes the document on the table.
What?
I'm not comfortable with this.
Dad.
I know the world, sweetie.
Dad, please.
I don't think a 17-year-old should be traveling alone.
I'm not going to be alone.
Two 17-year-olds.
Amanda's 19.
Brow furrowed, he sips his coffee. Lenore taps an impatient finger.
How about this? How about if I go along? You won't even know I'm there. I'm very good at being invisible.
As you so amply demonstrated for most of her life. Just sign the paper, Brian.
Don't think about it.
Come on, Brian, everyone at this table knows what that means.
Hey, Kimmy, there's something else.
I don't want anything else.
Kim.
I don't get you.
What?
You sacrificed our marriage in the service of the country. You made a mess of your life in the service of your country. Can't you sacrifice just a little this one time for your own daughter?
I would sacrifice anything for her.
Then what's your problem?
I'm not comfortable putting my daughter at risk.
Putting our daughter at risk by going to Paris? You're pathetic.
She walks out, leaving him sitting unhappily on his own. He takes another sip of coffee.
She's coming.
Thanks. Three conditions. I want the address and phone number of where you're staying.
Okay.
If you move, I want to know where and with whom you'll be staying.
Okay.
You call me when you land. You call me every night before you go to sleep.
Okay.
It's international. My number's programmed in.
Okay.
You mean you're not focused?
Yes, I am.
What did I say?
You said that to call you when I land and every night before I go to sleep, and your phone's international, the number's programmed in.
Okay. One last thing. I get to take you to the airport.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you, Daddy. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Mom! I love you, Dad. Mom, he's excited, he's excited! I'm gonna go call Amanda.
Wouldn't it have been easier just to sign it the first time around?
Wouldn't it have been easier if you and I had talked about it first?
He walks away, leaving Lenore with her dark hair blowing in the breeze.
There are certain areas in Paris that you should avoid. I've written them down.
Dad.
Come on, take it.
We're going to be spending like 90% of our time in museums. You don't have to worry.
That's like telling water not to be wet, sweetie.
Mom says your job made you paranoid.
Oh, my job made me aware.
I always used to ask Mom what your job was that you were away all the time. And she would tell me to ask you. Whenever I did see you, I was afraid to ask.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. Maybe because I was afraid to find out. Like, maybe it was something I wouldn't like.
I worked for the government. You knew that.
So, you were like a spy, right? What happens if I push this button?
Don't touch that button. Well, no, I was a preventer, actually.
A preventer?
Yeah.
What did you prevent?
Bad things from happening.
So, it was a good job?
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Do you miss it?
I missed you more.
They both smile happily as she leans over and kisses him. They join the traffic approaching the international airport.
Go ahead, I'll get the bags.
Brian frowns as he spots a map with a list of capitals on the front. Berlin, London, Madrid, Paris and Rome have all been circled in pen. As the girls hug, he opens the map. Arrows have been drawn in black pen between the cities on the list, with dates next to each. A chauffeur opens a car door, and Lenore gets out.
Oh, Jimmy, we'll give you a hand with those.
I can manage. Lenore, do you know about this? She's not just going to Paris.
I know.
She lied to me.
Yes, because she can't be honest with you.
Why? What are you talking about?
Your rules and conditions.
What is this?
It's U2's European tour dates.
She's following a rock band around Europe.
All the kids do. Stuart got her the tickets. We've arranged for her to stay in the best hotels.
Best hotels? You know, you live in your little bubble here behind your wall with your maids, chauffeurs, and servants. You have no idea what the world is like.
Yes, and neither will she, unless she goes out and experiences it. Don't you tell me I don't know what the world's like. For 5 years, I waited for a phone call that didn't come for weeks at a time. For a knock on the door telling me there'd be no calls anymore. Listen, I know you moved here to build some sort of relationship with Kimmy, but you're not going to do that by smothering her. Let her live, or I promise you'll lose her.
She walks away, and stern-faced, he picks up the bags.
Girls.
He takes a snap, and Lenore grins cheesily as the girls go through security.
Kim!
He holds up his hand to say, phone me.
Love you.
Brian waves, and Lenore blows a kiss as the girls disappear in the crowd. The elongated iron pyramid of the Eiffel Tower stands tall amid the sunny low-rise sprawl of Paris. Kim and Amanda emerge through the arrivals gate at the airport.
I'll teach you all the French words I know, which may not be that much, but, you know.
Amanda takes a picture of Kim as they stand in line for a taxi.
Great. Okay, now take one.
Some help? One with the two of you?
Yes, please. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, great. Very nice.
Thank you.
Where are you from?
California.
Oh, I wish they all could be California girls. No, I'm Peter.
Oh. Je m'appelle Amanda. This is Kim.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
You're going into Paris?
Oui.
You know, taxi here are so damn expensive. Want to share?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Perfect. Nice.
Thanks.
Brian grins at his photo of the girls.
To check arrival, please press 1. Please enter the flight number. Flight 288 arrived in Paris Charles de Gaulle at 8 a.m. local time.
Yeah.
Oh,
are you serious? Oh my god.
Nice address.
Oh yeah, thanks. It's actually my cousin's, but they're in Madrid for the summer, so we have the whole place to ourselves. How cool is that?
I didn't know that.
It's Toby.
Well, I have to be going. Nice to meet you.
Oh, okay.
You too.
Bye.
Hey, there is a party tonight at school. Want to come?
Sure, yeah.
Amanda, we don't even know him.
What is there to know? We saw it.
I come pick you up around 9.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, great. Your apartment?
It's the whole 5th floor, Hoffman.
Okay, see you tonight.
Okay, bye.
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 Peter walks off grinning as the girls bustle through the high wrought iron gateway to the luxury townhouse apartment block. Peter makes a call.
Yeah, 9 rue de la Pompe, 5th floor. Two girls around 18.
Oh my god! That's exactly.
Are you kidding me? It's great.
I just wish you would have told me they weren't gonna be here. What's the difference?
I told my dad they were gonna be here.
You told your dad you were going to museums too. Oh, come on! He's not gonna know. I'm gonna sleep with him.
Who?
Peter!
You just met him.
I hear French guys are amazing in bed. Maybe he has a friend, huh?
No. No.
Oh, come on. You gotta lose it sometime. Might as well be in Paris.
Oh.
Amanda bounces wildly to the music, jumping onto a plush sofa as Kim covers her ears. Brian paces worriedly in his living room, clutching his mobile phone. He checks the time, then pushes a button on the keypad. As Kim heads to the toilet, her phone is ringing in her handbag. Brian has his phone clamped to his ear. Kim's phone shows Daddy calling, then one missed call. Lenore wakes up in bed and sleepily puts on the bedside light.
Hello.
It's me. Has Kim called you?
Brian. She's 17. She's in Paris. Give her some space.
She'll call. Take a sleeping pill.
Have a drink or something. Good night.
Good night.
He slumps into an armchair and tries to relax. In the palatial apartment, Kim sees her phone ringing. The screen shows Daddy calling. She picks it up and anxiously heads for a quieter room.
Hi, Daddy.
Kim. What did I say? You were supposed to call me when you landed.
I'm sorry.
I thought maybe something was wrong with the phone I gave you.
No, it was just such a rush at the airport.
All right. Well, if I'd had the number where you were staying...
I would have just called there. What's the number?
I don't have it.
Kimmy, come on.
This is one of the conditions. Let me talk to one of the cousins. I'll get it from them.
Dad, they're in Spain. I didn't know, I swear.
To Spain? Kim...
Is there anything else you want to tell me?
She glances across into the room where Amanda's still dancing.
Kimmy.
Kim jumps, seeing a man enter the room with Amanda.
There's someone here.
Her cousins are back?
Amanda's attacked.
Oh my god, they got Amanda!
What?
What are you talking about? Kimmy, what's going on?
Dad!
Kim!
Dad! They took her!
They took her!
All right, listen to me.
Oh god!
Did you meet anyone
on the plane?
No.
In the airport?
No. Yes, Peter.
Peter? Peter who?
I don't know.
An American?
No.
Did he know where you were staying?
Come here.
Stay focused, Kimmy. You have to hold it together. How many people are there? Be precise.
Three, four, I don't know.
Where are you?
I'm in the bathroom.
Go to the next bedroom. Get under the bed.
Tell me when you're there.
He set up digital recording equipment and sits, his face a mask of calm, as Kim rushes to a bedroom and scrambles under a bed.
Now, the next part is very important. They're going to take you.
Kim, stay focused, baby. This is key.
You will have 5, maybe 10 seconds. Very important seconds.
Leave the phone on the floor. Concentrate.
Shout out everything you see about them. Hair color.
Eye color, tall, short, scars.
Anything you see, you understand?
Two figures in black boots and jeans enter the room.
They're there. I can hear them.
Remember, concentrate.
The intruders look into adjoining rooms, then pause near the bed.
Put the phone closer so I can hear.
Trembling, she holds the phone out towards the nearest pair of boots. The two men leave the room. She's dragged out from under the bed by her ankles. Brian fights to hold back tears as he listens. He glances at the tiny Sony speakers on his desk and slowly raises the phone to his ear.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Good luck.
His hand holding the phone drops to his side, but he fights back his emotion. His car speeds through the nighttime city.
Sam, it's me. You need a favor. I'm going to download something. I need it analyzed right now. She's been taken.
What are you talking about?
Any enemies overseas, Stuart?
Why would I have any enemies?
Because you do business overseas through multiple shell corporations. Because you were involved in an oil deal with a bunch of Russians that went south 5 years ago.
How the hell do you know about that?
Because I was not going to let my daughter live with someone without knowing everything about them.
Yeah, well, I have a few resources of my own.
Now's not the time for dick measuring, Stuart. I'm going to ask you again. Do you have anyone who's looking to hurt you?
Not that I know of.
Which room's Kim's?
I want to know what happened.
I got a call from her. There were people in the apartment, then she was taken.
Oh, God.
Which one?
That one.
Is there something I should be doing?
I have a lease agreement with NetJet through your umbrella company in the Bahamas.
I do.
Get me a plane to Paris.
Okay, for when?
An hour ago.
I'm gonna make the call. You'll be all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Hand clamped to her mouth, Lenore watches as Brian searches Kim's room.
Would you... Please get her back to me, Brian.
First, I have to find her. Sam, what have you got?
They're speaking Albanian. Based on their accents and dialects, they must be from a town called Tripoja. The place is ground zero for scummers like this. Even the Russians give these guys a wide berth. The one you spoke to, his name is Marco. And we have information that a mobster boss by the name of Marco Ocha moved to Paris about 6 months ago. If he's the one, he's a big fish. And the tattoo, by the way, is group ID. Am I on speaker? Are you by yourself?
Lenore's here.
Hey, Lenny.
Hello, Sam.
She needs to hear it, Sam.
The specialty of the groups coming out of this area is trafficking in women.
Keep going.
Okay. Their previous MO was to offer women from the emerging East European countries like Yugoslavia, Romania, Bulgaria, jobs in the West as maids and nannies. Once they'd smuggle them in, they'd addict them to drugs and turn them into prostitutes. Lately, however, they've decided that it's more economical just to kidnap traveling young women. Saves on transportation costs.
Not my little baby.
What else?
Based on what they know about the way these groups operate, our analyst says you have a 96-hour window from the time she was grabbed.
To what?
To never finding her.
No! No, no!
On a private jet, Brian listens intently to the recording. It's sunny in Paris as the small jet touches down. Brian, holding a sack of groceries, waits outside the luxury apartment building. A woman comes out. He walks past her and inside before the front door can close. He dumps the groceries and hurries up the red-carpeted stone staircase. Arriving at the apartment, he listens at the front door. He opens a window from the common hallway, looks up at the outside wall, then steps out onto a ledge. He reaches up, gripping onto another ledge, and eases himself along to a corner where drain pipes run down the building. He clambers past the pipes and keeps moving along the ledge to a window. He reaches in, opens the window, and steps into the apartment. He moves cautiously from room to room. He finds the girl's luggage, abandoned in a hallway. The map is sticking out of Kim's handbag. He thoughtfully touches the bag, then looks in the living room. Chairs have been overturned and a vase knocked over. Visualizes a man attacking Amanda, then looks around and imagines Kim's face at an opposite window. He walks into the bathroom she spoke to him from. He goes to the window and pulls out the small voice recorder.
Oh, God! They took her!
Go to the next bedroom. Get under the bed. Tell me when you're there.
Finds the bedroom, kneels down, then crawls under the bed.
Stay focused, baby. Leave the phone on the floor. Concentrate. Shout out everything you see about them. Hair color, eye color, tall, short, scars. Anything you see, you understand? They're there. I can hear them. Remember, concentrate.
He visualizes the kidnapper's stout lace-up boots. Signs of struggle in the bedroom, the rumpled bedclothes and a smashed mirror. He examines the broken glass and removes a few threads of fiber. Backing out of the room with pain etched on his face, he spots his daughter's broken mobile phone on the floor. He stoops down and removes the memory card from its slot. He inserts the card in a digital photo machine at a metro station and flicks through the images. There are pictures of the girls, smiling, posing and pulling faces. Kim asleep on the plane. He pauses at the snap of the two of them together at the taxi rank, frowns and zooms in. Scanning to the right, there's a reflection in a phone box. Zooming in reveals Peter's smiling features. Brian hits the process button, and the image of Peter holding the mobile phone becomes sharper and clearer. Peter's at the airport. He makes eye contact with a big black guy, bald with a beard, who nods towards a young blonde coming through arrivals on her own.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Peter.
I'm Ingrid.
On holidays?
Yes.
Me too.
Cool.
You know, cabs here are so damn expensive. Want to share?
Sure, why not?
Great.
Excuse me.
Brian bundles Peter headfirst into the taxi.
Hey,
drive! The two American girls from yesterday.
It's a noise!
The next rib drives into your lungs. The two American girls, where are they?
Peter's bald colleague hauls Brian feet first out of the cab. Brian rolls over, kicks the man in the groin, and gets to his feet. The guy rams him into the side of the car. They trade blows, then Brian chops his attacker in the throat and slams his head into the taxi. Peter's running away up a slip road. Brian gets behind the wheel of the taxi as the driver approaches with two police officers. Gunning the car, Brian knocks over a baggage trolley as he speeds after Peter. Peter ducks around a hairpin onto another ramp. Brian hauls the car around to follow, but drives straight into oncoming traffic. As several cars collide, he abandons the cab and sprints after his quarry on foot. Clutching a stitch in his side, Peter sees a truck on a road below the ramp. He jumps, falls dozens of feet, and rolls as he lands on the trailer's roof, then jumps to the ground off the driver's cab. He staggers, dazed, out into the road as Brian looks down helplessly. Peter's flattened by a truck. Brian winces and looks around in shock. He walks back down the ramp, past the backed-up traffic. A man in an overcoat comes out of a police station with tricolour flags above the door and a security camera pointed at the entrance. As he passes a pavement cafe, Brian lowers the newspaper he's hiding behind, gets up, and follows him. Aware of his pursuer, the man slows as Brian gets closer. They draw level and stop.
Just like the old days.
Would you have it any other way?
Between you and me, no. But now that I sit behind a desk, the world looks different.
You mean looks boring?
I'm indifferent.
Okay, a little boring. But is being retired any more interesting?
It wasn't until my daughter disappeared in Paris yesterday. She and her friend were marked by a spotter at the airport. Albanians took her.
How do you know this?
I'm retired, not dead.
And I assume you don't want to go to the police?
I was told I have 96 hours. That was 16 hours ago.
Okay, first, we should find a spotter.
I found him. He's dead.
You found him that way?
He glances at Brian, who doesn't return his look.
Brian, you cannot just run around tearing down Paris.
Jean-Claude, I will tear down the Eiffel Tower if I have to.
Don't forget who you're talking to.
I thought I was talking to a friend.
You are. But please remember, your friend has a desk now.
Deputy Director, Internal Security. Very impressive. The Albanians.
They showed up from the east 6-7 years ago. 15-20 of them. Now there are hundreds. We don't even know how many. And dangerous.
So I heard. Where do I find them?
The best place to start is Porte de Clichy. Brian, try not to make a mess.
He strides across a road and into the crowds. As Jean-Claude makes a call, I need you to tail someone. Brian shakes hands with someone in an office, then leaves. A small silver Audi pulls out onto a nighttime street. Jean-Claude is telling his children a story. So Little Red Riding Hood says to the wolf, "Grandma, what strong arms you have." And the wolf replies, "Your assistant. Here, thanks." Yes? He visited a temp agency and hired a car. That's all? Yeah, it's quiet. Not for long. Don't let him kid you. Prostitutes work the street in fur coats and short skirts. Cars pull up to the pavement to do business. A guy with shoulder-length hair is standing on a traffic island as the silver Audi pulls up.
Gregor Milosevic?
Yes, I am Gregor.
I'm Mr. Smith. Get in.
He grins and climbs in, clutching a brown leather attaché case.
Here is my resume. The employment agency said we would be doing translation.
Yes, Albanian to English. You do speak Albanian?
Albanian, Serbian, Croatian. I was a teacher in primary school before the war began in Pristina, so naturally
What's your rate?
My rate? Usually it is 25 per hour for the first 3 hours, and then it goes up to...
You're here for 10 hours. Wait here.
Mr. Smith, I do not understand. What is the job exactly?
Right now the job is to wait here.
Brian walks towards a group of working girls on a street corner.
Looking for a date?
I love your dress. Is that silk?
I don't know. You want to know the prices?
Just the way it falls. It must be silk. How it complements the natural curves of your body.
The rate is 40 euros for the standard.
Standard. Could you be more specific? Because back home, the standard covers a whole range of possibilities. Like kissing, you know, closed lips, open lips.
Listen, if you're not buying, piss off.
No. I didn't say I wasn't buying. I just like to get comfortable before I purchase. Like this karaoke machine I bought. I must have read that manual from cover to cover so many times.
I don't give a shit about your karaoke machine, okay? You're gonna get me in trouble if you don't buy.
Trouble? Really? With who?
Piss off.
Okay. Listen, I'm sorry. If I want a package deal, do I get a discount?
You cost me two now.
My name's Brian.
A man gets out of a car.
Forget. You better leave.
I thought we were negotiating.
I'm done, I swear. It's not my fault. I told him.
Why are you bothering the girl?
None of your business.
She is my business. And if you're not spending money, you're costing money.
Who's negotiating?
There's no negotiating. The price is the price. And now you owe me for two that got away.
I don't know nothing.
He slips a bug onto the guy's coat.
50 euros or I kick your ass.
Sure, okay. Chill. Jeez. Okay. Here's your 50.
Another 50 for being an asshole. I'll get the hell out of here. If I see you again, I'll kill you.
The pimp crosses the road back to his expensive 4x4 as Brian heads for the Audi.
Mr. Smith, I do not know what kind of job I'm supposed to do for you, but this is...
You are hired to translate.
Yes, but translate what?
This.
He tunes in a small radio receiver.
Translate.
They're talking about you.
What about me?
They're not saying nice things.
Be specific.
They're saying, excuse me, Mr. Smith, what an asshole you are. Please, if you can explain to me why we're doing all this, maybe...
Just translate.
One of them says the sausage gave him heart, but...
Keep going.
The other one is suggesting something his grandmother used to give him for that. Do you really want to hear all this, Mr. Smith?
Every word.
Now they're talking about football. The game between Lazio and Marseille. And they lost money on the betting. Perhaps... If I knew the purpose...
You're better off not knowing. Still football?
One is on the phone. He has to do a job at the construction site. Something about fresh merchandise giving problems. Mr. Smith, I do not understand any of this.
You're not supposed to. Goodbye.
I asked for an English-Albanian dictionary.
Did you bring one?
Gregor retrieves a book from his case.
Thank you.
A guy in a car watches as Brian drives off. Floodlights bathe the construction site in ghostly white light. Amidst the machinery, bustle and welding sparks, a queue of men waits in a line outside a large portable cabin. They enter one by one, hand over money, and are given numbers on cards. The pimp emerges from inside.
I am Pont Mir.
Brian's in the queue. He hides his face from the pimp, who climbs into his 4x4. Inside, the cabin is divided into cubicles separated by curtains. Bits of card with numbers in felt tip are pegged to the top of the drapes. Brian moves apprehensively down the makeshift corridor between the rows of cubicles. Looking into one, he sees a young woman on a bed, bathed in sweat. She beckons him in. She's got needle marks on her forearm. A man stands over a comatose girl in another cubicle.
Paul?
Ryan backs out and starts looking in every cubicle. All are occupied by naked and semi-naked couples. His frown deepens as light reflects off beads on a jacket. He remembers the airport and the design on Kim's jacket as she ran to meet Amanda. He hauls a guy off the dark-haired girl, punching him to the floor, then looks at her. It's not Kim.
Where did you get this? Where did you get this?
I'm good.
Who gave this to you? Who gave this to you?
I'm good.
Her eyes blink blearily. A boot to the groin floors the gangster. Then Brian rips a strip of cloth from a drape and strangles him with it. He gets an elbow to the gut and staggers backwards, grabbing at the drapes, then slams the flat of his hand into the guy's nose. Rammed into a wall and punched in the head, the guy drops. A flick knife opens, but the attacker's punched in the groin, then a gun is pulled. The shooter's kicked to the floor as another gunman storms in. Shoots one of the girls before being dropped by Brian.
Come on! Don't! Come on!
The pimp hears the shots from his office. Brian grabs the dark-haired girl and Kim's jacket. He bundles her into the back of a car. He buckles her in as the pimp and his men approach, weapons drawn. Brian returns their fire and clambers behind the steering wheel as rounds pepper the car's bodywork. Slamming the four-track into gear, he weaves and turns, slamming into a wall of fuel drums as the pimp gives chase in his Mercedes 4x4. A brazier is sent flying, igniting the spilled fuel. Brian speeds away from the fireball, but the gangsters give chase, driving right through the billowing flames. Grimly, he rallies the Jeep through the muddy sight, narrowly missing a massive earth mover. His pursuers are right on him and still firing. And draws alongside, trying to push Brian off the dirt track, which has started to slope steeply. Cresting a rise, Brian rams a pickup that got ahead of him, pushing it sideways down a steep slope. It rolls several times, coming to rest on its side. Brian drives round it and away, glancing at his passenger, but two other vehicles are still in pursuit. The driver's window shatters, showering Brian with glass. He and a pursuer trade paintwork, racing door to door. Final shove sends his adversary spiraling into the air, crashing through a lamppost before smashing into the ground. The pimp's Mercedes almost rams Brian from the driver's side, but falls back in behind the Jeep. Flying rounds, Brian manages to stay focused on driving. He floors the accelerator. The pimp hurtles straight into the huge metal bucket of one of the giant earth movers. It nearly scoops the roof clean off the Mercedes. Brian drives the Jeep straight through the site of his cabin. I said he wouldn't stay quiet long. What do we do now? Now he's in action, my guess is he'll lose you. Jean-Claude and his officer tailing Brian hang up. Their target sees the tail in his rearview mirror. He accelerates through a red light, and his tail can't follow in the heavy traffic. Brian doubles back on another road, and the officer reacts as he's given the finger. Shit. Using wire, Brian opens the lock on a small car and carries the girl across to it from the Jeep. She lolls comatose in the back as he gets behind the wheel. He arrives at a small hotel. The owner's asleep at the desk.
Monsieur, then, how are you?
Hello, Gilles. How's the wife?
I'm still in charge. It's a very long time since I have seen you.
Way too long.
The usual accommodation?
Plus one.
The man hands over the key with a smile. Brian goes out to the car and retrieves the sleeping girl. In the room, he hooks her up to a drip, hanging it from a light fitting on the wall by a bent wire coat hanger. He inserts a needle into an arm already covered in puncture marks. He pops open small glass vials, drawing out the contents with a syringe. Wiping the exhaust from his eyes, he mixes the contents of the syringe with another serum, shakes it up, then injects the mixture into the drip. The girl is fast asleep. He checks the drip and slowly gets to his feet. He brushes dust from the decorated denim jacket and stares at it with eyes full of pain. He holds back his tears and lowers himself into an armchair next to the bed. Sighing and wiping an exhausted hand across his face, he falls asleep almost instantly. Jean-Claude's in a picturesque park.
Well, can't you come and meet me first? I can't see you. Where are you?
I can see you and hear you very well. You can tell them to stop jogging now.
Okay, we've got the signal. Localizing, cross-checking transmitters.
You didn't really think I was going to come down there, did you?
I didn't think you were going to make such a mess.
I didn't have time to worry about Venus.
I know. You have 70 hours.
Now I have 56.
Got him.
No, now you have none. My chief wanted to arrest you. I convinced him to send you home.
Air France 001, leave today at 2, first class.
Courtesy of the French government for best services rendered.
Police cars hurtle into a narrow street.
Now what about my daughter?
I told you I sit behind a desk now.
I take my orders from someone who sits behind a bigger desk.
Come on, seven dead bodies, three in hospital, a building destroyed.
Total chaos at the airport.
He wanted your ass in chains. It's the best I could do, I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't cut it anymore, Jean-Claude. Not this time.
Police vehicles pull up and the officers sprint into a building.
You can't beat the state, Brian, you know that.
I'm not trying to beat the state. I'm trying to save my daughter. But it was a trailer, not a building.
The cops find a mobile phone next to a radio handset on the roof. Locate him.
Negative.
He's watching them from the flat top of a church tower. He grins to himself and moves off. He calmly walks past the police cars and drops his radio handset into a rubbish bin. He walks down the steps to a metro station. Later, he's sitting in the hotel room copying down words from the Albanian dictionary. The girl is still in bed, the jacket hanging on a bedpost. She pulls at the IV needle.
No, leave it. It's all right. It's fluids and medication to counteract the drugs. It's all right. Where did you get this? Where did you get this jacket? Did you get it from her? Was it from this girl?
I didn't steal it. I was called, she gave it to me.
Where? Where did she give it to me?
In the house.
What house?
The house with the red door.
She's with a guy in a sports car.
Sorry.
Two men snatch her, and she's bundled through a large wooden front door painted red.
He said it was a party.
And the girl who gave you this jacket, was she in the house?
She was nice.
I know. She's my daughter.
I need to find this house. Do you know where it is?
Her eyes, blurred with tears and makeup, focus as she remembers. Slumped in a daze in a car, she sees a street sign.
Paradise.
Rue de Paradis. Brian strides up the sunny cobbled street and approaches the red door. In a courtyard, two men are playing dominoes.
Good morning.
I help you?
I'm here to see your boss.
No boss.
He reaches into his leather coat with the collar turned up and hands over Jean-Claude's card.
You're doing nothing wrong here.
I push one button and 30 agents will be here before you have time to scratch your worthless balls. Now stop jerking around before I close you down for wasting my time.
The guy's slim with a moustache and a crescent and star tattooed on his hand. He looks at his burly companion.
Right here.
The big guy eyeballs Brian, standing stiffly in the black leather coat over a jacket and tie. Brian eyes him coolly. The slim guy returns.
That weapon?
You're holding it.
The guy thoughtfully flicks the card, then gestures for Brian to follow him up the steps leading out of the concrete-walled courtyard. The big guy's eyes stay glued to the tall visitor. They walk down a drab corridor and past a room where two more men are playing cards. They pass others, one of whom stares at the stranger, then enter a kitchen with four men around a table. They're drinking coffee and beer from cans.
Black, one sugar, please.
A bearded guy with a ponytail has a star and crescent tattooed on his hand.
What is it you want?
I'm here to negotiate the rates.
We already negotiated the rate with Mr. McCann.
Mr. McCann has moved to another division. I'm here for the renegotiation.
All the men have the star and crescent tattoo.
Unless you think I'm being unreasonable, let me explain ourselves. Nice coffee. We have you under satellite surveillance, 24 hours a day. We hear everything you say, we know everything you do. Do you have any idea what it costs just to change the angle of the lens on a satellite orbiting 200 miles above the Earth? Huh? And those costs have gone up. Our costs go up, your costs go up. It's only logical. By the way, which one of you is Marco?
Why do you want to know?
I was told Marco is in charge.
We are all Marco.
Marco from Tropoia.
We're all from Tropoia.
That's a game you want to play. The rate just went up 10%.
Mister, if you're trying to make extortion on us because we're immigrants, we know the law.
I'm extorting you because you are breaking the law. Now, which charge would you like to be arrested for? Drugs? Kidnapping? Prostitution? Take your pick. You come to this country, take advantage of the system, and think because we are tolerant, we are weak and helpless. Your arrogance offends me. And for that, the rate just went up 10%. Now, you want to get down to business or do you want to keep playing?
How much?
20%. And you have my word it'll not go up for a year.
I'm a capokin.
The slim guy reaches for a tin box on a shelf.
How do you say sugar in your language?
Sugar.
Sugar.
A guy with dark hair who seems to be the leader takes a wad of cash from the box, reaches across, and drops it on the table. Brian picks it up.
You made a very good investment, gentlemen. See you in a month. Oh. A friend gave this to me. It's Albanian. You mind translating it?
The guy with the ponytail takes the piece of paper and shows it to the others.
Method.
Ponytail grins unpleasantly.
Good luck. Good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Brian stares at the man with the voice from the recording of Kim's abduction, then calmly looks round at the others.
You don't remember me. We spoke on the phone 2 days ago. I told you I would find you.
Ponytail slammed into the table. Brian grabs his knife, kicks a guy back, stabs one through the heart, and plunges the knife into Darkhair's midriff. Uses Darkhair's gun to take down the slim guy. Falling flat, he takes out another as the rest flee. More arrive to investigate. Brian gets up and gets moving. He ducks behind a wall as a man comes downstairs. He shoots him in the back. blasts another on the stairs, then takes out the charging burly guy. He hurries upstairs to check the rooms. A girl's comatose on a bed, tied to a radiator. It's not Kim. Behind another door is a similar scene, but it's not Kim, nor the next.
Kim.
He turns the girl's lolling head, but it's not his daughter. There are two girls on bunks. A blonde's eyes stare up glassily. He walks slowly into the room. She's cuffed to the metal bedstead. In shock, he approaches her and reaches out to feel for a pulse. He looks down, sees puncture marks on her arm and a syringe on the floor with a bloodied cotton swab next to it. He stares in horrified disbelief and strokes her cheek. Setting his jaw, he strides from the room.
Wake up!
I need you to be focused.
He slams 2 6-inch nails through a guy's knees.
Are you focused yet?
He clips electrodes to a metal chair that Ponytail is cuffed to.
Where is this girl? Where is she?
He calmly wipes the spit from his face with a rag, then forces the rag into the man's mouth. He turns on a light switch and current flows through Ponytail's body. The light bulb hanging from the ceiling flickers.
You know, we used to outsource this kind of thing. But what we found was the countries we outsourced to had unreliable power grids.
Very third world.
Sometimes you'd turn on a switch and the power wouldn't come on for hours. And then tempers would get short. People would resort to things like pulling fingernails, acid drips on bare skin. The whole exercise would become counterproductive. But here, the power is stable. Here, there's a nice even flow. Here, you can flip a switch and the power stays on all day. Where is she?
The rag goes back in, and the power goes back on.
I don't have any more time to waste. Marco from Tropoia. You either give me what I need, or this switch will stay on until they turn the power off for lack of payment on the bill. Where is my daughter?
Stucky Pearson's. I've sold her. She was Pearson. A lot of money.
You sold my daughter? You sold her? Huh? To who? What?
Sinclair.
Sinclair. Is that a person? A place?
Francis Sinclair. Francis Sinclair.
Where can I find him?
I don't know. Please.
I believe you.
He picks up the black leather coat and makes to leave.
But it's not going to save you.
Jean-Claude walks down an evening street carrying a long loaf of French bread. He goes into a building and enters his apartment.
Je suis rentré.
I'm home. Daddy. Hello, darlings. Hi, Dad. They go into the dining room. The chicken smells great.
Look who drove by.
Brian. What a pleasant surprise.
The children waited up for you. If you tuck them in, maybe we can eat before everything gets cold. Brian, will you do the honors?
Sure. And just a minute. Les enfants.
Children, bedtime. Yes, it is. It's late. Go to bed now. Good night, sweetie. The children snuggle down in their beds.
Dormez bien.
Sleep well. He walks back down the corridor and ducks into the bathroom. He reaches into a cupboard under the sink. He retrieves a gun and tucks it into the waistband of his trousers in the small of his back. He smiles as he walks into the dining room.
I was just telling Brian how nice it's been since you left the old job for the new one. Home every night for dinner, get to see the kids more.
Yeah, must be nice coming home every night, seeing your kids, knowing they're safe.
Brian has been thinking about relocating.
Really?
Yes, to Paris. He's been visiting houses. White or dark meat?
Dark, please.
Find anything interesting?
As a matter of fact, I did. Over in the 10th arrondissement, on Rue Paradis. The people there know someone that works in your office, I think. A Mr. McCann. You know him?
Oh, Henry! I call him Mr. Nervous. Always seems like he's about to have a problem. Carrots?
I got to the bottom of it, Jean-Claude. I know everything. I hope you're not involved in this shit.
What shit?
This is not the time or place, Brian.
Are you involved?
Involved in what? What are you two talking about?
Are you?
My salary is X. My expenses are Y. As long as my family is provided for, I do not care where the difference comes from. That is my entire involvement.
And what about my family?
I told you I would help you as long as it didn't cause trouble for me.
Who is Patrice Sinclair?
I don't know. I don't care. I am driving you to the airport.
Jean-Claude!
Shut up, Isabelle. Shut up.
Let's get going. Dinner is over.
I'm not finished yet.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. That's what happens when you sit behind a desk. You forget things, like the weight in the hand of a gun that's loaded and one that's not.
You asshole.
It's a flesh wound. But if you don't get me what I need, the last thing you'll see before I make your children orphans is the bullet I put between her eyes. Now, Patrice Sinclair.
Jean-Claude types the name into a computer. A photo of a man with receding hair on a mobile phone and an address come up on the screen.
You could have made this much less painful if you had been more concerned about my daughter and less concerned about your goddamn desk. Please apologize to your wife for me.
He leaves the policeman out cold on his office floor. The eyes of Patrice Sinclair stare out from the computer screen. Dapper in a tuxedo, Sinclair is surrounded by glamorous women at a function. Watched from outside, he excuses himself and moves from room to room through the gathered guests, stopping to talk with two men. Brian lowers the binoculars he's been watching through. A police ID bears the name Jean-Claude Pitrel and Brian's photo. The security man on the door nods and Brian joins the party. He walks through the opulent rooms, scanning the faces of the elegantly dressed guests. He walks out onto a balcony around a palatial chamber hung with huge tapestries. On the opposite side, Sinclair goes into a room with two men. Brian makes his way over.
Can I help you?
Yes, I'm here to see Mr. Sinclair.
Your name, please?
He shows the ID as the guard checks the name. The lift behind him shows it's on floor minus one.
I'm sorry, your name is not on the list.
Oh, please check again. Inside.
He shoves the guard back at gunpoint and hits a button. The doors open on a corridor with brown stone walls and a marble floor. The passageway is blocked by a metal gate. He drags the unconscious guard out of the lift, hiding him in a storeroom. He moves down the corridor, illuminated by luxurious light fittings on the walls. He listens at a door, then moves on. A waiter appears carrying a tray with a bottle of champagne on ice.
May I help you, sir?
A door opens and a guy with a slick ponytail finds Brian holding the champagne.
Your champagne?
Yeah, we'll take it.
He smashes the guy in the throat with the tray. He enters a room where a young woman in lingerie is standing on a stage.
I have 50,000. 50,000. 50,000. 100. 100,000. 100. 150. I have 150.
Your champagne, sir.
Two. I have two. 250.
May I serve?
Please.
I have 250.
250. Sold for 250,000.
Men are bidding from behind a glass screen. The woman staggers slightly and a man comes to take her away as the lights go down and Brian pours the champagne. Excellence, the bidding went as you wished. There's one lot left for auction. We'll be back shortly.
The last item. As usual, we save the best for last. Speaks English, some French, certified pure.
A figure is led onto the stage. An embroidered hooded cloak hides her features. Brian spills the champagne.
Sorry.
Get out.
The bidding will begin at 100,000. 100.
Naked, apart from shoes and gold beaded lingerie, the girl's face turns towards Brian. It's Kim. She looks dazed and unfocused.
100,000.
I said...
I heard what you said. Buy her.
I have 100.
Buy her.
150. 200. 250. 350. 350,000. 4. 4. 450. 450. 450,000. 450. 500. 500,000. Sold. That concludes the sales for tonight. Thank you all for coming. You can collect your purchases directly.
Move.
You will never get away with this.
If you want to live, you'll make sure I do.
Brian's knocked down from behind. Faces swim before his eyes. Nearest is Sinclair.
Mr...
Brian's hanging by his wrists from a pipe. He looks up, remaining calm.
Well, we know you're not this man. So what do we call you? It doesn't matter what we call you, really. What does matter is what you're doing here. Do you mind telling me what you're doing here?
The last girl. I'm her father.
Oh, my.
Give her to me.
I wish I could, honestly. See, I'm a father myself. I have two sons and a daughter. But let me tell you something, Mr. Whoever you are. This is a business. This is a very unique business with a very unique clientele.
I'll pay.
This business, you have no refunds, no returns, no discounts, no buybacks. All sales are final. Besides, discretion, it's about the only rule we have.
Kill him quietly, I have a guess.
He eyeballs Sinclair, his features curling into a sneer as the man leaves. He looks around at the group of suited thugs. One of them gives a nod. A leather strap is wrapped around Brian's neck and tightened. He looks up. The bolt holding the pipe to the ceiling is loose. He pulls down hard. The pipe hits one, he headbutts another, and superheated steam blasts a third. He breaks his strangler's neck and shoves him down a flight of metal steps. One man blunders through the steam with a gun. Fire extinguisher puts him out of action. Brian throws the metal canister at another, then comes in close and tries to wrestle his gun off him. The gun is forced down, pointing at the man's foot.
Would you please go see which part of the word quietly? They did not understand.
Yes, sir.
The shot hits the guy in the chest. Finding the key to his cuffs, Brian frees himself. Sinclair's minion goes to investigate. The man goes down. Brian spots Sinclair.
Okay, we can resolve this. I know how you feel. We should talk. Okay, we can work this out. You have no idea.
Where is she?
Please, understand. Please try.
He's hit in both shoulders and the leg.
There's a boat by the quay. Please understand, it was all business. It wasn't personal.
It was all personal to me.
The lift containing Sinclair's body opens. Security move guests away from the scene. Outside, Brian sees the Middle Eastern buyer shoving a figure into a car. He sprints off after the vehicle. Running out into the road, he sprawls across the bonnet of an oncoming car. Keeping the buyer's expensive Audi in sight, he sprints across a bridge and down the road running alongside the River Seine. The car drives down a cobbled ramp to a quayside. Looking down from the balustrade above, Brian sees it pull up next to a row of luxurious boats. Figures board one of the yachts, including one bare-legged with a cape over her head. He sprints off. The boarding ramp is pulled in, and the luxury vessel gets underway. Brian watches, gasping for breath. The car is still on the quayside. He bashes the driver's head into the car's roof, then slams it in the door. He gets behind the wheel and reverses up the cobbles. He flicks the car round and speeds off. The yacht, lights blazing, is cruising in the middle of the river, approaching a stone bridge. Brian hurtles along against the flow of traffic. He narrowly misses a major collision at a junction and ends up driving down the pavement. He spots the yacht and steers the car down another ramp towards the riverside. Driving the wrong way against the traffic, he looks up to see the yacht passing under a bridge. He flies through a tunnel and draws level with the vessel. He speeds up another ramp. They are being prepared, sir. A large man reclining on a bed dismisses the buyer with a wave. Brian stops by a bridge. He sprints away from the car to the middle of the span, just as the yacht passes beneath. He climbs over the parapet and jumps. He grapples with the guard on the deck and snaps his neck. Limping from a bad landing, he reaches the top of a curving stairway and looks down. He swings down, kicking the man in the chest, then wrestles the guard over the side. Three young women in white veils are led down a corridor. The buyer looks over his shoulder and frowns, spotting Brian out on deck. One of you take the girls to the sheikh. The other, come with me. We have an intruder. Search the boat. Kill him if necessary. A guard, his gun drawn, enters a room and Brian strikes. The gun's knocked out of his hand. He's hit with the door and his head slammed into a hand basin. Another guard is disarmed, then bludgeoned to the ground with his own weapon. A guard with a submachine gun checks the rooms on a wood-paneled corridor. He fires as he's bashed across the face with a pistol. Brian shoots him in the stomach. What's going on, number three? The buyer frowns. Where are you, number three? He signals to two other guards to get moving. Shoots a guard in the face through a round window in a door. He exchanges fire with another. He dives through a window into a cabin to avoid the hail of fire, then leaps behind a sofa as the guard blazes his way in. Brian hits the guy in the legs, then in the chest as he falls. It's safer in your room, Excellence. What's going on? Who is it? The girl's father. He wants her back. I'll get rid of the dog. Brian takes out the next shooter, then slams into the stateroom door as another tries to enter, grabs his gun and fires. The buyer gets behind him and hits Brian in the side. Wincing with pain, he shoots back but misses. He dives through a glass partition, leaping on the buyer. They grapple with a curved knife, Brian forcing the blade onto the man's face, but he gets thrown off. The buyer comes at him again, swinging the blade, but Brian skillfully parries the attack. Brian slashed across the midriff. They trade blows, then he grabs the buyer by the head, forcing him to the floor, but gets kicked away again. They wrestle back and forth, trying to turn the knife on each other. They blunder into a stateroom, Brian launching killer blows with his elbows. They attack with bottles. Brian keeps hold of one with a vicious, jagged edge. He jabs the guy in the arm, then slams the jagged rim into his chest. He breaks his arm, twists the knife, and shoves it into his gut, ramming it home with his knee. Exhausted, Brian sways, then picks up a gun. He limps towards a closed door. On the other side, the balding, overweight Sheikh is holding a curved knife at Kim's throat. Brian raises his weapon.
We can't need...
The bullet catches the Sheikh in the head, flinging him backwards away from Kim. Tearfully, she turns to her father. Kim clings to her father, who wraps his arms around her. A baggage trolley says, "Welcome to Los Angeles." Lenore and Stuart are waiting at arrivals. Kim launches herself into her mother's embrace. Stuart hugs them both.
Oh, here, let me get that for you. Brian, if there's anything you need...
I've got everything I need.
I love you so much. Thank you.
Lenore smiles at Brian in tearful gratitude and hugs him. He closes his eyes, still affected by her touch.
Attention, travelers. You are not required...
Shall we go? Sure you want to ride with us?
I'll be fine. I'll take a cab, thanks.
All right.
Kim bounds over to her father and hugs him again.
I love you, Dad.
Love you, too.
They smile, keeping eye contact as the car drives off. Brian, alone in front of the bustling airport, picks up his bag.
Where are we?
I told you, it's a surprise.
Hi.
Kim's stunned, recognizing pop star She-Ra.
When someone says hi, it's usually polite to say hi back.
So I heard you want to be a singer.
I do.
She does.
Well, come on in. Let's see what you got.
They all smile as She-Ra closes the front door. Liam Neeson. Maggie Grace. Leland Orser, John Grease, David Warshawski. Holly Valance, Katie Cassidy. Xander Berkeley. Olivier Rabaudin. Gerard Watkins. And Famke Janssen. Executive Producer Didier Horeau. Line Producer Frank Le Breton. Unit Manager Gregory Barrault. Director of Photography Michel Abramovich, AFC. Production Designer Hugh Tissandier. Costume Designer Olivier Berriot. Editor Frédéric Toraval. Casting directors Nathalie Chéron, ARDA, and Fern Cassell, CSA. Script supervisor Isabelle Kerriou. First assistant director Fabien Verguez. Sound Martin Boisseau and Alexandre Wittmer. Re-recording mixer François-Joseph Orr. Post-production supervisors Eric Bassoff and Clara Vincienne. Original music Nathaniel Michali. A film by Pierre Morel. Written by Luc Besson and Robert Mark Kamen. With Mark Amyot as pharmacist, Arvind Vajraktaraj as Marco, Xander Berkeley as Stuart, Russia Bookpitch as Anton, Mathieu Bousson as undercover agent, Katie Cassidy as Amanda, Michelle Flash as Gio, Yvette Gonzalez as maid, Nicolas Giraud as Peter, Maggie Grace as Kim, John Grease as Casey, George Hertzberg as security at Stuart's mansion, Rubens Heiker as Lika, Vanke Janssen as Lenore, Camille Jappy as Isabelle, Valentine Galage as Vince, Fanny Kolarova as prostitute, Goran Kostic as Gregor, Christophe Karuchkin as Gilles, Edwin Kruger as Jean-Claude's assistant, Nabil Massad as Sheikh Rahman, Jalil Nasiri as Ali, Liam Neeson as Brian, Leland Orser as Sam, Olivier Rabaudin as Jean-Claude, Anka Radici as Ingrid, Christy Reese as paper shop clerk, Nathan Rippey as Victor, Upendra Singh as Singh, Helena Soubirion as Girl with the Jacket, Tommy Spahia as Nizir, Anatole Taubman as Dardon, Bertrand Troy as Taxi Driver, Holly Valance as Shira, David Warshawski as Bernie, Gerard Watkins as St. Clair. The producers wish to thank La Ville de Paris, Mission Cinéma and La Préfecture de Police de Paris, Hôtel de Crillon, City of Los Angeles Airport, Entreprise Cosson, Monsieur Ismaël Dusserre, Sudimas, Nikon, Automaton, Star People, Bangard Olufsen, Planet Sushi, Clarins, Orangina, Lexmark, Nespresso, Law 7, Samsung, Cargo, Gum Bleu, Visa, American Express, Europe France, Crystalie, HP, Nokia, Trekking, Culligan, La Pâte, Cabane de Zucca, Emporio Armani, Giorgio Armani, Galerie Lafayette, Cocon Tozai, Merowitz, Prada, Scooter, Les Yachts de Paris, Avanel, Dassault, Les Bateaux Mouches, Frédéric Mastro, SDS. Copyright 2007, EuropaCorp, M6 Films and Grief Productions, all rights reserved. EuropaCorp, M6 Films and Grief Productions are the authors of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. The events, characters and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead, or to actual events or firms, is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution, as well as civil liability. Further titles continue to scroll. Audio description by Deluxe. Written and voiced by Roland Bean. The end.